This podcast was recorded Thursday, September 26th at 12 o'clock p.m. Things might have changed by the time you hear it. Like, maybe politicians will stop calling people to lobby them for favors and everything else will be done out in the open. Nah, probably not. Let's talk politics. This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly guide to all things Ohio politics. I'm Steve Brown, my co-host Mike Thompson, taking some well-deserved time off this week. Lots of stuff going on in our state right now. Governor DeWine says he'll soon be sending his gun proposals to lawmakers in the forms of bills. The anti-Chinese campaign to uphold Ohio's new nuclear bailout law also raging on. But another story has completely dominated the headlines here in Ohio and around the country this week. In case you haven't heard, which seems basically impossible at this point, President Trump could face impeachment. That's after House Speaker Nancy Pelosi did an about-face and ordered an impeachment inquiry into the president, asking the Ukrainian president to investigate his 2020 political rival, Joe Biden. The latest on that, a House committee met Thursday morning to question the acting director of National Intelligence, or DNI, Joseph McGuire, about a whistleblower complaint about that phone call. It was led by Democratic committee chair Adam Schiff, saying the entire point of that phone call to the Ukrainian president was for Trump to hurt a political opponent.
This is, in sum and character, what the president was trying to communicate with the president of Ukraine. It would be funny if it wasn't such a graphic betrayal of the president's oath of office. But as it does represent a real betrayal, there is nothing the president says here that is in America's interest, after all. It is instead the most consequential form of tragedy. For it forces us to confront the remedy the founders provided for such a flagrant abuse of office, impeachment.
That's the case Democrats are making against Trump. Republicans don't see it that way at all. They say the transcript of the phone call proves nothing. They focused a lot Thursday on the issue of whether the complaint had to be immediately forwarded to Congress because of executive privilege, since it revolved around a conversation involving the president. Here's Republican Intelligence Committee member Chris Stewart of Utah talking to the DNI McGuire.
Now, there's been a big deal made about the fact that this is the first whistleblower complaint that has been withheld from Congress. But it's also true, isn't it, that it's the first whistleblower complaint that has potentially falls under executive privilege, and it's also the first time that it included information that was potentially outside of the authority of the DNI. Is that true?
To the best of my knowledge, Congressman, that is correct.
Okay, and I will say to my colleagues sitting here, I think you're nuts. If you think you're going to convince the American people that your cause is just by attacking this man.
So that is where we stand as of noon Thursday. Joining us now to talk about it is the longest serving woman in the U.S. House, also a new supporter of the impeachment inquiry, Marcy Kaptur, a longtime Democratic congresswoman from Toledo. Marcy Kaptur, thanks for joining Snollygoster.
Thank you very much, Steve.
So we should say that you are not a member of the House Intelligence Committee that questioned Joseph McGuire on Thursday. You were there, though. All that said, some other congressional Democrats have wanted to impeach Trump for months, if not years. This week was the first time that you vocally supported an impeachment inquiry. Why was that? What was the tipping point?
The tipping point for me was foreign interference in our elections, particularly Ukraine. I co-chair the Ukrainian caucus and know more, I think, about that issue than most of my colleagues, having followed it since the 1970s, actually. And I wasn't in Congress back then, but I've paid close attention. And in reading the transcript of the president's call with the new president of Ukraine, President Zelensky, listening to the president's words on a tape that was transcribed, trying to compromise the new president of Ukraine, and asking for a quid pro quo that if you, you know, the president of the United States has been withholding military aid to Ukraine in contravention of measures that Congress has passed. And we've been trying to get the aid to Ukraine because, of course, Russia invaded Ukraine, and they've been at war for 5 years. So this is serious, and Russia far outscores Ukraine in terms of its military readiness and capabilities. And so I was very involved in trying to release that aid to Ukraine, not knowing that the President of the United States had stopped the aid in order to try to get the new Ukrainian government, a brand new president, involved in trying to diminish one of our presidential candidates, and to use the president's private lawyers, Rudy Giuliani, for one, going over to Ukraine and trying to impact our elections here at home. This is outrageous. This is mixing your role as president with your political campaign. And in fact, knowing how serious the Russian threat is to our country, giving Vladimir Putin, in a sense, aid and comfort by trying to engage the government of Ukraine. Everything that happens in Ukraine is known by Russia. Just take my word.
We should say that Republicans insist there was no quid pro quo. They insist that Democrats are just trying to connect the dots here, and that the president did not do anything improper.
They must not have read the full transcript of the call then.
The statement you issued on Tuesday did not directly call for impeachment. You wrote, quote, "If President Trump and his administration fail to comply with legitimate congressional inquiries, then there is no other option than for this House to stand with our American allies and to move forward with impeachment." Do you think Trump has complied so far? And did this Thursday morning hearing change your stance at all or advance your stance on impeachment?
Well, it advanced my stance once I had read the content of the phone call. When I wrote that original release, we did not have those records. I have been very, very cautious about taking a position, because whether it's tax records or whether it was the content of phone calls like this, we simply did not have the information. Once I read the phone call, and we only, by the way, have gotten the redacted version of that, we do not have the full version of that phone call. We need to have that, along with other material that we've just learned. The White House placed on the highest level of security clearance inside the White House. They moved those conversations relative to Ukraine to highly guarded security.
And that was actually the focus. That was the focus of the whistleblower complaint, saying that these systems meant for information that is sensitive regarding national security were used to hide politically sensitive information.
That is correct, and we don't have any of that. But when I read the president's phone call and I read the words that he used, "I'd like to ask you a favor," and then he talked about CrowdStrike, he talked about the upcoming election, he talked about Rudy Giuliani, his personal attorney, going to visit the president of Ukraine. If you're president of the United States, you send your secretary of state, you send an ambassador. You don't call on your personal attorney to go see the president of a country. And so this is completely outside the boundaries of what is normal behavior of a president of the United States.
Again, Republicans and Democrats viewing this transcript completely differently. There is, to Republicans' point, there's nothing in this transcript that says, if you do A, I'll do B. It is a little bit of connecting the dots, but still you're insisting that this is a gross violation of the Constitution.
It's a gross violation, and I will tell you, I serve on the Appropriations Committee. And to withhold $400 million of military assistance to the nation of Ukraine, when our European allies have given even more than we have to try to help win this war on the European continent on behalf of the nation of Ukraine that wants to accede to Europe, I mean, that is really using your own narrow political interests to try to change the foreign policy of the United States.
But again, that was not
one of our major enemies.
This whole battle is going to hinge on the minutia of the language. There was nowhere where it said, "I will restore this if you look into Joe Biden."
Well, we do not have the full transcript of the conversation. Mm-hmm. We only have a redacted version. But what I read was enough for me to be much more open publicly about what we need to do in order to get to the bottom of this, because when you start tangling with Ukraine, with the amount of corruption in that part of the world, with the Russian interference in our elections in 2016, with the hundreds of phone calls that this president and his political people like Paul Manafort made to Russia, Michael Flynn, what we already know about Russian interference in our political system, then to see this kind of influence on the new president of Ukraine and his security officers is something that I find completely un-American and repugnant.
As you mentioned, you are also the co-founder and the co-chair of the House's Ukraine Caucus. The center of this whole dispute is, as we know, linked to military aid that the president initially withheld, then signed off on. What exactly does this money do?
The money provides for defensive weapons for Ukraine. It provides for military training. It provided initially for even boots and uniforms. Ukrainians, you might remember, completely denuclearized after the fall of the Soviet Union on the promise that the West would protect them in the event that Russia invaded. Guess what? It didn't happen initially. And so over 15,000 innocent people, including civilians, have been killed in that country. There have been over 1.5 million people who have been displaced and over 30,000 injured. It is a very bloody war. It doesn't get a lot of publicity in the West. I think it will get more publicity now. And President Zelensky is a new president. He's probably the youngest president to assume office there in modern history. And, you know, the jury's out on what's going to happen in that extraordinarily important country that is a middle ground between Turkey and Europe. It's a borderland, and that's what its name means. So Ukraine is extremely important, and it's right under Russia. It's to the south of Russia, and it really is the original capital of Russia. And then I won't go into all of the history, but honestly, Ukraine is a scrimmage line for the fight for liberty on the European continent right now.
The roots of this are linked to President Trump trying to get the Ukrainian president to investigate Joe Biden and his son's connection to a natural gas company there that has faced some serious corruption allegations. There's no evidence that Hunter or Joe Biden did anything illegal. But generally speaking, do you think it was appropriate for Hunter Biden to be making up to $50,000 a month from this Ukrainian company, as his vice president father was considered the Obama administration's point person on Ukraine?
Right, I don't. But that has nothing to do with Joe Biden. In fact, of all the presidential candidates in the race, there is no person Russia fears more than Joe Biden. Because Joe Biden understands what Russia is capable of. He served for 3 decades as chair of the committees in the Senate, though I've not served in the Senate, obviously, that dealt with foreign policy, and he became, during the Obama administration, the vanguard of America's policy toward Ukraine.
Yeah, he flew there over a dozen times.
I'm sure he did. And I have no doubt that, you know, President Obama really didn't. He left it to the vice president, and I think that if you go back at the record, you will find that Joe Biden lobbied Congress. He not just traveled there. His travel miles as vice president all around this world were extraordinary. And the president depended upon him for the foreign policy that was assembled during those years. But it's sad that, you know, we've reached this point. But we know for President Trump how many of his own staff are now sitting in jail because of their relations to Ukraine and Russia and their engagement in our elections in 2016. So I think that, actually, I sort of thought when this whole story broke, I thought, you know what, maybe this is a larger power's way of placing Ukraine centerfold as we move into the election of 2020 so that people understand how important liberty is wherever it's being threatened.
You've been in Congress a long time. You remember the Bill Clinton impeachment hearings. This is going to grind Washington to essentially a complete halt. And you think it's worth it, right? There's a lot that's going to happen if this process moves forward, but you think it's all worth it.
I do, because our first responsibility is to protect and defend the American people. We take an oath to that. The Constitution leads us in that direction. We are an equal branch, and actually the first branch in the Constitution. And we have to make sure that our foreign policy is free of any undue interference by any set of forces, private, public. We have to protect the interests of the American people, and frankly, upholding our NATO alliance, our transatlantic alliance, the most important defense alliance we have historically. And it was won at great cost to the people of this country and from prior generations. We have to understand what's at stake. And there is no question that Russia intends to meddle in our elections. And, you know, I will say this for the record. If you think about it, in terms of Vladimir Putin, Zelensky, the president of Ukraine, is very popular. He speaks Russian. He's popular in Russia, too. He is a great threat to Russia and to Putin's position in Russia because people there know life isn't good for them. And so Zelensky and people around him are in position to really do something extraordinary in that part of the world. And we can't, we have to keep our eye on the real target and don't ever think of Ukraine without thinking of Russia and what Russia's ulterior motives really are.
We're talking right after the House Intelligence Committee hearing wrapped up. Where does the process go from here?
Well, the hearings are ongoing in the Intelligence Committee, and there are five other committees that are also trying to seek out records and try to obtain information. We need to actually get the declassified whistleblower complaint, all the full transcripts of President Trump's conversations, and a lot of the information that's stored on these very secure computers at the White House, of which we were just made aware.
Is there any timeline for this process?
Well, the White House fights us at every point, but we have to use subpoena power in order to bring this information to the respective committees. Frankly, I don't care initially if it's put out in the public domain. I'm perfectly all right as a member to trust my colleagues who serve on those committees. I serve on defense. I'm sure that we will ask for information as well, many times in classified hearings. That's okay with me as an initial step, but the president can't stonewall Congress.
Marcy Kaptur, the longest-serving woman in Congress, a Democrat from Northwest Ohio, and also the co-chair of the House's Ukraine Caucus. Thanks again for joining Snollygoster.
Thank you, Steve, very much. And if I just might mention, you know, in Cleveland, there's the Ukrainian Museum and Archives, and the chairman of the board and one of the founding members, Andy Fedinsky. There are a whole set of people in Cleveland who are very familiar with the whole Ukrainian situation and Russia's influence. They've just returned from meeting with President Zelensky in New York at the United Nations. That might make a very good interview for you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We'll be right back.
On All Sides with Ann Fisher, we cover the topics that affect life in Central Ohio, from immigration to the economy to the continuing opioid crisis.
But the reality is, if you don't save someone who's overdosed, they have no opportunity to recover.
Hear thoughtful, in-depth conversations about the issues that matter now. Subscribe to the All Sides with Ann Fisher podcast at Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Snollygoster, Ohio's weekly political podcast from WOSU Public Media. It is time for our Snollygoster of the Week Award. That's the trophy, proverbial trophy that we give out to the week's shrewdest political move. This week, it goes to our very own Rob Portman, Ohio's Republican U.S. Senator, of course. This week, he fell in line with most other Republicans when it comes to the possibility of impeachment of the president. He said, quote, "The American people want us to get things done for them rather than focus on more and more partisan investigations. The Democrats' impeachment inquiry will distract Congress from the bipartisan legislative work that we should be doing to find solutions and deliver results for Americans," end quote. Pretty boilerplate Republican thing to say this week, but Portman did not feel that way back in 1999. 20 years ago, Portman was a congressman from Ohio, and you guessed it, he voted to impeach Bill Clinton for lying under oath. Just like now, the House led that impeachment charge, but it did eventually fail in the Senate. And we do have an amendment to last week's Snollygoster of the Week Award. We gave it to the Ohio Republican Party when they wanted to force reporters to stay in a pen during an upcoming fundraiser where Kellyanne Conway will be the featured speaker. News organizations, including WOSU, pushed back and threatened to not cover the dinner unless the GOP changed their policy, which they eventually did. It's a compromise light, if you will. Reporters will still have to stay in the pen for the event, but could talk to attendees afterward and could try to talk to people during the event with the help of the GOP's communications staff. So the anti-Snollygoster of the Week Award, if you will, goes to the Ohio GOP for rescinding what we thought was a heavy-handed policy. If you have a suggestion for next week's show, please send it to us. You can send that email to snollygoster@wosu.org. Until next week, I'm Steve Brown, and you have been listening to Snollygoster here from WOSU Public Media.